please be seated.
Our second case this morning is United States against Anabinette. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Lieutenant Commander Matthew Shelp, and with me is Lieutenant Commander Tom Belsky. And together, it's our privilege to be here before this court. We represent Sergeant Justin Anabinette in this matter. Chief Justice Efron had asked that I be given the opportunity to reserve 3 minutes.
You may. Please proceed.
Thank you. Your Honor, the issue in this case is that the Navy and Marine Court of Criminal Appeals erred when it reviewed for an abuse of discretion rather than de novo the military judge's legal conclusions that the appellant's guilty pleas were proper in this matter. The relief that we seek is for this court to set aside appellant's guilty pleas and remand this case for further proceedings. Or in the alternative, we'd ask that this case be sent back to the Court of Criminal Appeals for review under the appropriate standard. In this case, the military judge made the legal conclusion to accept appellant's guilty pleas without informing appellant as to the availability of the affirmative defense of a lack of mental responsibility. This legal decision was made in the face of a record that contained significant amounts of evidence that indicate that the appellant's mental condition was at issue.
What did this judge not do that he should have done?
Well, Your Honor, I'd first answer that question by saying I think the judge tried very, very hard to...
I think he did, too. He reopened the proceeding. He engaged in extended colloquy with counsel. Your client repeatedly eschewed any intention of raising defense of mental responsibility. So here you have a judge who's got a guilty plea. He's got a guy before him, wants to plead guilty. He pleads guilty after the normal inquiry. Then he puts on somebody in mitigation. The guy gets into territory that looks like it may bust the guilty plea. The judge calls it. The judge stops him. The judge engages in a colloquy. The judge engages in a colloquy with counsel. He reopens the plea. He engages in a colloquy with the accused. What more should he do?
Well, Your Honor, first, what I would suggest is that faced with this record, I would state that the first thing the military judge should have done is specifically extracted from the defendant, from the appellant, a waiver of this defense after the testimony.
Didn't he do that?
No,
he repeatedly asked him, are you raising this defense? And he repeatedly said no. Are you saying he didn't use the magic words or what?
Well, first I would say that I don't believe that he... With all due respect, I don't believe that he repeatedly asked the appellant that question. I think
he repeatedly asked the appellant's counsel that question.
I agree.
Is it your position that this is something that has to be personally waived by the accused?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have any support in case law for that proposition?
Yes, I believe that's the holding that this court made in the Harris case, Your Honor.
Okay.
And while I do agree that the military judge was trying very hard to salvage this plea, I think that the facts that were before the court were such that, you know, honestly, maybe this just wasn't a plea that was salvageable given the record that was before the court. Dr. Clark Smith, the forensic psychiatrist.
There are 2706s, were there not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do those help or hurt your argument?
Well, Your Honor, they definitely are contrary to Dr. Clark Smith's report and the majority of his testimony. The first 706 board, or both 706 boards, found that he was not suffering from a severe mental disease or defect. So,
isn't the 706 board the mechanism to try and determine these issues?
I agree that it is the mechanism to try to determine those issues. And had this military judge been faced with just those 706 boards and not the detailed report provided by Dr. Clark Smith, maybe we wouldn't have the issue that we have today. However, Dr. Smith's report, as this court is probably aware, is a detailed report. He conducted an extensive forensic analysis of this appellant's psychiatric condition. He conducted lengthy interviews, And his findings, without a doubt, suggest that, given that he diagnosed the defendant as suffering from bipolar level one with psychotic features.
Counsel, let me bring you back to the issue that was granted in the case. First of all, do you agree that if the standard is abuse of discretion, that the lower court got it right?
Well, Your Honor.
And if not, why not?
Okay. First, as the court is obviously aware, I don't agree that abuse of discretion is a proper standard.
Well, let's start with my question, and then you can make your argument on the question you want to talk about.
And I would say that even under the abuse of discretion standard, I do think that the lower court did not get it right in this case.
Why specifically is that so?
Well, as this court's aware, the military judge, in making a decision to accept a guilty plea in this case, has a variety of responsibilities. There has to be a factual record that supports the plea. There has to be, if there's an affirmative defense waived, as there was in this case, that has to be resolved. And also the military judge has to determine that the plea was made knowingly and voluntarily. And this military judge, although again, he made great efforts to try to salvage the plea, I think failed to resolve the inconsistencies that were created by Dr. Smith's testimony in this case.
So your argument is that there was a substantial basis in law and fact for questioning the guilty plea?
I think that argument, although I think that, yes, that, I mean, I think we went under that argument too as well, Your Honor. That's not the argument we made, but I think we could win under that argument with this record as well.
What specifically, in terms of the factual support for the guilty plea, was wrong or missing?
Well, the factual support that was missing in this case, for example, was that the defendant, and what even the military judge's final conclusion, the defendant had no recollection of committing this offense. And he acknowledged that repeatedly throughout the plea.
But he also acknowledged that he had learned the facts, correct?
Well,
and there's case law from this court that says that's sufficient, isn't there?
There is case law from this court that says that's sufficient. However, I would suggest that I don't necessarily believe that the appellant explicitly stated that he learned the facts. I think what the appellant said was that he reviewed the statements that he made, he reviewed the evidence in the case, and...
And believed that it was true.
He believed that was consistent with the planning that he made in this case, although he held to the fact that he had no recollection of committing that. And so that alone would be a substantial basis of fact to question the validity of this plea. And then when you take into account the testimony of Dr. Smith, we get into the issue of a lack of mental responsibility.
Okay, well, what are we supposed to make of the fact that the defense was specifically not desired by the defense?
Well,
I mean, they specifically said, we've considered it, and we don't think that it applies. And that was consistent with the 706 boards.
I agree. And then at the beginning of this hearing, prior to accepting the plea, the military judge specifically asked defense counsel whether they're raising any issues as to the defendant's mental condition, as to his competency to stand trial, and as to his mental responsibility at the time of the offense. At that time, they both, or there was a civilian counsel in this case, both of them answered that question and declined, essentially waived at that point. However, as we went forward in this proceeding, everything was going along nicely until Dr. Smith testified in this case. And at that point, when Dr. Smith's report was admitted into evidence and when his testimony was heard by the court, I think that changes the focus of the military judge's duties. And again, I believe that this court's holding in Harris dictates that at that point the military judge was left with the option of explicitly extracting a waiver from the appellant or not accepting the guilty plea. And here,
counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Post Dr. Smith. Here's judge and accused. Did you know that was wrong? Yes, I did, Your Honor. At the time you did it, did you realize you were committing an offense? Yes, I did, Your Honor. Now you have heard Dr. Smith testify correct. This is page 181 of the Joint Appendix. Yes, Your Honor. You understand you have some medical problems. Yes, Your Honor. Was somebody telling you to do this, for example, Jason or somebody else? No, Your Honor. I have read in a statement where you believe there's a secret army you were putting together. Were you gathering these weapons for your secret army? No, Your Honor. Did you realize it and said you were violating a regulation at the time? Yes, I was aware I was violating a regulation, Your Honor. You believe you had any justification for that? No, sir, I do not. So forth and so forth. What more is the judge supposed to elicit from the accused other than that he knew what he did was wrong and he had no mental problem that kept him from knowing what he did was wrong? Is there anything on this record other than his statement that he didn't remember the actual act that calls that into question?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part, Judge.
That calls his mental ability at the time into question. We have the testimony of Dr. Smith, which is based on examinations later and is really an opinion as to post-offense conduct.
Well, Judge, I would say that that is certainly part of Dr. Smith's report in this case. However, on page 222 of the Joint Appendix, for example, Dr. Smith states that the appellant was significantly impaired with psychotic symptoms related to bipolar disorder and has been preoccupied with psychotic delusions for most of the past 15 to 18 months. It's likely that this offense was committed as a cry for help, although it's possible he was also motivated by psychotic delusions regarding his secret army.
Okay, well, counsel, the entire colloquy between the civilian counsel, Dr. Smith, and the military judge was the civilian counsel stating correctly that a defense of lack of mental responsibility is a two-pronged test, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And didn't they recall Dr. Smith, and he specifically said that he knew the difference between right and wrong and could have conformed his actions?
It certainly did, Your Honor. The last effort to revive this plea, Dr. Smith was called back to the stand after a lengthy exchange between the military judge, the civilian counsel, the trial defense counsel, and the trial counsel. And as you'll note on the record, the doctor did come, and the record does note that, I think it's interesting because the record says it should be noted that Dr. Smith was present during this discussion. And Dr. Smith did come up and say the magic words, Your Honor. I don't dispute that. However, those words are so contrary to the report that he submitted and so contrary to the previous testimony that he submitted that, again, I believe that this triggers the responsibility of the military judge to advise this appellant that affirmative defense is available and to extract his waiver from that.
Counsel, there are more than a dozen pages of the record where the military judge was struggling with that precise issue. And I challenge you to point to the law that he didn't understand or that he misapplied.
Well, Your Honor, what I would say to that is, again, I completely agree that the military judge made extraordinary efforts to salvage this plea.
But that's not the question. The question is, did he understand and apply the correct law, and was his interpretation, was his decisions with respect to the facts clearly erroneous?
Well, I would say that his decisions with respect to the facts of, given the balance of evidence before him as to whether this affirmative defense was available to the appellant, and by failing to notify the appellant of that and extracting a waiver of that, yes, that's where he failed, Your Honor, and that goes to the knowing and voluntary nature of this plea. And, you know, they certainly addressed this issue at exhaustion. I mean, they went over and over it. I think there's 20-plus pages where they tried to revitalize and salvage this plea. However, you know, the court is probably also aware during this plea, these responses that the appellant has given, such as sticking pencils into his eyes during the plea, you know, the validity of his responses, I guess, comes into question, but that's what makes it critically important, at least on the record, for there to be an explicit waiver by this appellant and the judge to explain that he believes the affirmative defense applies.
Can I make sure I understand? You're trying to, when you talk about the waiver, you're pulling that from footnote 13 in Harris?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're not arguing that there has to be, as a matter of law, there always has to be a waiver when someone mentions mental health. You're arguing that based on the facts in Harris, it was necessary to make further inquiry, and now you're trying to say that your facts are like Harris's facts.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. I certainly would...
Right framework, that you're trying to get your facts into the Harris box, not argue that there's some per se rule that's been violated here.
Right, and I believe that the facts of this case do fit within the Harris box, given, the significant amount of testimony provided by doctors.
I understand. I just wanted to make sure I was...
That's right.
I would like to say make sure I understood how you were reading Harris, since I wasn't... I heard what you said slightly differently, but you're basically making a factual argument, not a legal argument.
Well, I think that...
In order to get within the further inquiries necessary category.
Right, Your Honor. I would say this, though, that there's... the providency of the plea is a mixed question of fact and law, and the facts, the critical facts here... led this military judge to make the legal conclusion as to whether he needed to do an inquiry, as this court has called for in Harris. And he failed to do that. And that is the legal error that he made.
Well, let me follow up on that then. As I understand it, you're saying that he initially made a factual error, which then grew into his erroneous legal conclusion.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying, Your Honor, that he made a factual error. I'm saying that he made a legal error when he applied the facts to the law as the Harris case dictates.
Okay. Well, then, I mean, since this case is about what standard should be applied, I want to make sure why you don't think an abuse of discretion rule is appropriate. And under the abuse of discretion rule, we look at three different things. We look at the facts, as they are found on the record, and admittedly, in guilty pleas, that's sometimes difficult because there aren't any specific findings. But those, would you agree, we review as being clearly erroneous?
Yeah, I do notice I'm out of time, and I'd be happy to ask you a question.
Please take the time you need to answer the questions that you
have. So for facts, would you agree, even in this situation, for findings of fact, we review clearly erroneous?
For an abuse of discretion, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, under the abuse of discretion.
Yes.
And so for the next two, for whether or not the military judge has the correct law and whether he applies it correctly, we look at that de novo.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And is there anything in this case that you are challenging as to the facts?
No, I think we don't dispute any of the facts that are on the record.
Okay.
It's just and
I just want to make sure you understand what my concerns are. Were this a case where the military judge allegedly misconstrued the facts and there was a factual issue, would you agree that we would apply that under a clearly erroneous standard?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're not arguing in every case we should apply a de novo standard of review for every aspect of a providency inquiry?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
You're arguing the facts of this case, he should have applied the de novo standard to those last two categories of the abuse of discretion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and that's what the law is, right? I mean, there's nothing new about that.
That's certainly what I believe the law
okay,
is.
Okay, thank you.
And then, therefore, just to be clear, please indicate precisely where in the CCA's opinion they did not apply that framework.
Well,
it's a question to make sure we're all looking at the same issue. Yeah, or you can do that. Why don't you do that on the reserve time? Is that fair? Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal to address that. Counsel for the government.
Counsel, before you start, I just want to find out if the government agrees with that general scenario as to generally we look at these things for abuse of discretion, and within abuse of discretion we have the three categories: facts, correct law, and application of the law. The first is clearly erroneous, the next two are de novo as legal questions.
The government wouldn't necessarily agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Certainly in a litigated case, or rather in a contested case where, let's say, we have an evidentiary issue that's being litigated at trial, when reviewing the military judge's decision on the evidentiary issue, his findings of fact would be reviewed for a clearly erroneous standard, and his conclusions of law would be reviewed de novo. In the guilty plea context, we don't have findings of fact. So in terms of separating this abuse of discretion standard into to clearly erroneous and de novo, it's a little more difficult in a guilty plea case. So like the lower court, the standard that the government would advocate would be the Prater test, and that is that a guilty plea should only be overturned on appeal if there's a substantial basis in fact and law for a question of a guilty plea.
Get stuck in the issue. Answer the question. If everybody agrees that it's a substantial basis in law or fact, or and fact is a better way to say it, or fact, I mean. But what's the answer to Judge Erdman's question? Therefore, on questions of fact, we do or do not review for abuse of discretion.
The court would, Your Honor.
Therefore, on questions of law, we do or do not apply de novo standard.
The case law is unclear on that. And the guilty plea context.
It's unclear that we review questions of law de novo?
Certainly, in generally speaking, conclusions of law will be reviewed de novo. But it's a little unclear in a guilty plea where all the military judge is determining is there a factual basis for the plea, what those conclusions of law are.
Didn't the military judge in this case actually make what could be called a factual finding when he found that Inabinette definitely knew that what he was doing was wrong?
He did, Your Honor. Certainly in this case, there are findings of fact and conclusions of law. But
so what do we do with those findings of fact? Do we apply de novo under your theory?
No, Your Honor. The entire standard would be abuse of discretion. The only point the government's trying to make is that in a normal guilty plea, typically you're not going to have these findings of fact like you do in this case.
But if you have them, you apply the rule as we've always applied it.
Yes, Your Honor. That would certainly seem to be the case here. But again, in the context of a normal guilty plea, there are no findings of fact for this court to review clearly erroneous.
I think that perhaps where you and appellant are perhaps maybe parting ways is this question of the decision to accept the guilty plea. Is that decision a legal decision, or is it a mixed question of law and fact? I think it appears to me that the cases have always recognized that it requires application of proper law based on particular facts, and that we review the military judge's decision for an abuse of discretion.
Certainly, Your Honor, and the appellant appears to be arguing that the military judge's acceptance of the guilty plea should be reviewed de novo, where the government is certainly at
the entire decision.
Correct, Your Honor, and the government is saying that it should be reviewed. The acceptance of the guilty plea should be reviewed for an abuse of discretion. Now, how that abuse of discretion standard should be set out, the government's a little unclear from the court's case law on exactly what that standard for the abuse of discretion.
Well, let's talk about the government's position then. Suppose we have two military judges who view the law in different fashion. Do we just say, hey, that's abuse, that's their discretion, doesn't bother us? Or is it the responsibility of this court and the responsibility of the court below within the service to determine what the correct legal situation is, whether it's a guilty plea or a contested case when there's an issue of law?
The latter, certainly, Your Honor. Were a military judge to inaccurately state what the law in a given case or a given factual scenario is, that certainly would be reviewed de novo by this court.
Or if unstated, if the result of the military judge's decision is to misapply the law, then is that not also reviewed de novo?
It would be, Your Honor. But again, under the general abuse of discretion standard.
Is this semantics? What's going on here? Seem to be fairly clear when you break it down to its component parts and figure out what it is you're analyzing.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's a fair statement. Bottom line, the military judge's acceptance of a guilty plea at trial should be reviewed for an abuse of discretion.
And if he gets the wrong law wrong or misapplies the law, then he has abused his discretion. I mean, that's what we say all the time.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor.
Under that chapeau, would you agree with Judge Erdman's breakdown? Whatever you call the overall exercise, would you agree that if you're looking at the component parts, you review facts for clearly erroneous questions of law de novo and mixed questions of law and fact, depending on what they are de novo?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under the overall rubric?
Of abuse of discretion, yes, Your Honor. Although the government would just say that the court has never explicitly set that standard out in the context of a guilty plea. May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Justin Dunlap.
Are you done yet?
You're just about out of time.
I thought I should introduce myself at some point, Your Honor. And I, along with Commander Paul LeBlanc, represent the government. In conducting its Article 66 review, the lower court reviewed the military judge's decision to accept the appellant's guilty plea for an abuse of discretion. The question before this court is whether the lower court applied the correct standard. The government's position is that the lower court correctly reviewed the military judge's acceptance of the appellant's guilty plea for an abuse of discretion, and that in the appellant's case, the de novo standard applied principally to the lower court's review of the record to ensure that the appellant's plea was knowing and voluntary. This court has consistently stated that pleas of guilty should not be set aside on appeal unless there's a substantial basis in law and fact for questioning a guilty plea. This standard is set out in United States v. Prater, suggests that the military judge is given discretion in his or her acceptance of an appellant's guilty plea, or a defendant's guilty plea. Additionally, this court has repeatedly stated that a military judge's decision to accept a guilty plea is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. This is found in this court's opinions, United States v. Shaw, United States v. Thomas, United States v. Philippe, amongst others. This approach follows that taken in federal courts of appeals, which have also applied an abuse of discretion standard under Rule 11. The 4th, 5th, 7th, and 11th circuits have all stated that the decision of a trial judge to accept a guilty plea is reviewed for an abuse of discretion.
Is Prater disjunctive? Is it a substantial basis in law? Must there be a substantial basis in law and fact to question a plea, or in either one? I know Prater says and, but how's it been treated?
The government's position would be if there's a substantial basis in either.
In either, then you can bust the plea.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
The appellant has confused the issue in this case by applying a de novo standard used to review whether the pleas were knowing and voluntary with the ultimate decision of the military judge to accept the appellant's plea, which is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. The appellant's heavy reliance on this court's opinion in United States v. Harris is misplaced. In Harris, after a post-trial 39A session, the military judge concluded that the appellant suffered from a mental disease or defect at the time of his offenses. Harris focused on whether the appellant's pleas were informed and not on whether there was a factual basis in the record for acceptance of the plea.
Well, in fairness to appellant, I think that in some sense he's really making an abuse of discretion argument, right, which is he's saying based on the facts of this case, the military judge misapplied the law because under Harris, he was required to get an affirmative assertion that the person still desired to plead guilty, despite the fact that this defense was available. I mean, isn't that really what he's arguing?
It is, Your Honor, but there's a critical distinction between the facts in United States v. Harris and the facts.
Well, I understand that distinction, but I'm just saying he's not arguing de novo. He's saying that the military judge in this case misapplied the law, Harris, to the facts of this case. Leaving aside the question of whether Harris applies to the facts of this case or not, I think that's what appellant's argument is, which is that the military judge had a duty, based on the footnote in Harris, to make further inquiry and get an affirmative assertion from the appellant that he wanted to plead guilty despite the fact he knew that this defense was here. And whether he did that or didn't do that is for us to decide based on the record, but let's make clear what he's arguing.
I'm not quite sure I follow that.
Well, you're saying that he's saying that we should review this all de novo, and I'm suggesting I don't think that that's actually what he's arguing. I mean, that's a semantics issue. What he's actually arguing is the military judge abused his discretion because he misapplied the law to the facts of this case.
I understand that the appellant to be arguing that applying a de novo review, as this court did in United States v. Harris, the military judge did not fulfill his legal duty under rules for court martial 910. Not that an abuse of discretion standard applies.
Okay.
In Harris, despite the military judge's finding that the appellant suffered from a mental disease or defect at the time of his offenses, The military judge never reopened the Providence inquiry to advise the appellant of the mental responsibility defense. Applying a de novo standard, this court found that the appellant's plea was not knowing and voluntary because the military judge never discussed the mental responsibility with mental responsibility defense with the appellant. Unlike Harris, here the military judge ensured that the appellant's plea was knowing and voluntary. The military judge extensively discussed the possibility of a mental responsibility defense with trial defense counsel in the presence of the appellant. This is found in the joint appendix at pages 154 to 155 as well as 166 to 173. Additionally, the military judge reopened the Providence inquiry to ensure that the appellant understood the meaning and effect of his offense, or the meaning and effect of his plea. This is found in the joint appendix at pages 178 to 186. Again, in United States v. Harris, the military judge never took similar steps to ensure that the appellant understood the possibility of a mental responsibility defense and never ensured that the appellant did not desire to assert it in Harris. The lower court's opinion concentrated on the issue of whether the appellant's pleas were proper, which is reviewed for an abuse of discretion, and not whether the appellant's pleas were knowing and voluntary. The reason for this is that in the appellant's case, there is no question that the appellant's pleas were knowing and voluntary. Again, the military judge extensively discussed the defense of mental responsibility with the trial defense counsel, and the military judge reopened the Providence inquiry. Despite all of this, the appellant still stated his desire on the record, or trial defense counsel stated his desire on the record that the appellant did not wish to assert the mental responsibility defense. Courts of appeals review de novo whether an appellant's plea was knowing and voluntary. For example, does the appellant understand the elements of the offense, as this court mentioned in United States v. Thomas? Does the appellant understand the terms of the pretrial agreement? Does the appellant understand any potential defenses that might apply, as in United States v. Harris? In this case, Dr. Smith testified that during sentencing, that at the time of the offenses, the appellant suffered from bipolar disorder with psychotic features. A de novo review should focus principally on whether the appellant's pleas remain knowing and voluntary in light of Dr. Smith's testimony. This requires an examination of whether the appellant had knowledge of the mental responsibility defense and yet still wished to plead guilty. In this case, appellant clearly had knowledge of the mental responsibility defense and still wanted to plead guilty. Now, whether there was a factual basis for the guilty plea and whether the military judge should have accepted the guilty plea is an entirely different question, which is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. In conclusion, the de novo standard applies to the lower court's review of the record to ensure that the appellant's plea was knowing and voluntary. Therefore, the lower court correctly reviewed the military judge's decision to accept the appellant's guilty plea for an abuse of discretion. If there are no other questions, the government asks that this court affirm the findings and sentence of the court below. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
First, I respond to the question regarding the CCA opinion in this case. And the CCA opinion essentially writes out the de novo aspect of the analysis. And on page 4, it lists that de novo review is inconsistent with the Prater substantial basis test. And to answer Your Honor's question, that's the specific aspect of the CCA opinion that I believe is contrary to the law.
Did you hear anything? Did you get to say what you wanted to say there?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear anything other than, let me try that again. When the government went through its lexicon and unpacked the sausage that is the standard of review kit, did you agree with what they said? Can you spot differences? Legal differences, not law to fact differences, but it may be just wishful thinking on my part, but I did not ultimately hear a disagreement on what the law is, just how it might have applied here. Do you agree with that statement? And if you don't, what's the difference between your view and their view on the law?
Well, I would just say that I do feel, in reviewing their brief, and when he and I haven't discussed it, that we feel that, or if you review it, we are pretty close. However, I think that the government fails to acknowledge the de novo aspects of the legal conclusions that are part of the whole decision to whether a guilty plea is proper. Again, I think that in this case, the military judge got the law wrong, and that should be subject to de novo review. I think that he got the law wrong because...
Did you hear the government say otherwise? Other than they got the law wrong part. But did the government say other than if the judge gets the law wrong, that's a de novo review?
Well, I'm not sure that the government said anything different than that, but I guess what I want to make sure was that...
In fairness, your job is to argue your position, not theirs. Go ahead.
If I could, the law that the judge got wrong in this case was that he failed to get the waiver of the defense from the defendant. He failed to realize there was a substantial basis in law and fact to question the probability of this plea. And he came to the wrong conclusion that the defendant did not have a severe mental disease or defect at the time of this offense.
Counsel, just let me ask you real quickly. Do you agree with this statement? If the military judge applied the correct law, and if the facts are not clearly erroneous, his decision is entitled to deference, as opposed to we should substitute our own judgment. Do you agree with that?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think that the proper standard is whether the military judge's legal conclusions, de novo is the proper standard, whether the record before it supports his legal conclusions.
Okay, I'm not sure that I understand how you're not then arguing that the whole thing is de novo and that it is an abuse of discretion.
Well, I mean, I just think that there's mixed questions in the entire...
But the situation that I just gave you is he applied the correct law and the facts aren't clearly erroneous, and we'll even say that, you know, that he applied the law correctly to the facts. You're not arguing that because... You're not going to make the argument that, well, he should have reached a different conclusion anyway, and you guys should look at it de novo. You would agree that his decision is entitled to some deference.
I think I do agree with that statement, okay. Judge. I'm not sure I understood it.
Okay.
The first time
I may not have articulated it clearly.
Well, it's probably me. If I could have a brief moment just to conclude.
Sure, please do.
I would just say that the military justice system takes particular care to test the validity of guilty pleas. Because the facts and law are not tested in the crucible of the adversarial process. And there also, as there was in this case, there may be subtle pressures that may influence the manners in which service members exercise their rights or waive their rights. And the providency inquiry and the judge's explanation of possible defenses are the established procedures to ensure the knowing and voluntary nature of a defendant's pleas. And here, those are the exact things that, even though there was great effort made to get there, we didn't get there, and that's why, ultimately, appellant's pleas were not a problem in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today, and the court will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Court stands in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.